This week on The Future of Sex.
I wish sometimes there was a button on the wall that you could just break glass in case of dating emergency and teleport like a nice man figure into my room.
I'm on a date, the girl Googles me at the table. How humiliating. You're 40? I said, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. Check MySpace, I'm 26.
So if you're online dating, just go outside, have a walk in the park, say hello to someone, yeah?
For single people today, I would say it's not only necessary, it is critical that you use online as one of your options.
Hey, I'm Bryony, and welcome to another episode of Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. Now, today's episode is focused on dating, and it's the final in our three-part series on dating and relationships. Before we get started, we just want to remind you this podcast contains explicit language and adult themes, so please put your headphones in if there are little ones around. Okay, so today we're really going to zero in on dating, and I have to say this episode is more like the now of dating than the future. If you're dating today, it's pretty likely that you're using an app, and data indicates that there are 91 million people around the world using dating apps, and that was taken in 2015, so you can only imagine since then. In America alone, 40% of adults have used online dating apps, and it's not just a case of using Tinder anymore. In 2017, you can go really narrow on your search for the ultimate mate. You can use your phone to meet someone who hates the same things as you do. You can play Fuck, Marry, Kill, which is actually a real game that lets you know how people feel about you and if they want to marry you or otherwise. Or you can match with people using a dating app like Nupal, which is designed for people who would like to find others that share the same sexual fantasies as them, whether that's role-playing or couples in search of a third person or just trying to find someone who likes wearing glasses. If you Google craziest dating apps, which you can guarantee I did, you'll come up with hundreds of choices. New and notables that I discovered included Sizzle for bacon lovers and Bristler for those with a love of beards.
Must love bacon?
I love bacon.
The naturally smoked kind?
Yeah, that's been cured for a really, really long time.
Exactly.
Sounds like you know what you like.
I like bacon. Do you want a piece?
But with all these dating apps for specific preferences popping up, it begs the question, does it really matter? Will we meet our soulmate if we filter by cuts of bacon? Recently, my friends over in Australia at the Queensland University of Tech analysed the preferences and dating behaviour of more than 41,000 Aussies over 4 months. And what they found out is that while people listed specific criteria, and this was using the popular dating website Down Under, RSVP, they often didn't contact the people that ticked their specific boxes. And by often, I mean less than 1% of messages were sent to people who matched the user's ideal match. Instead, up to 30% chose to chat with potential dates that don't match any of their criteria. Basically, what's in front of you in that moment, well, if it looks all right, yeah, it's good enough. Now, the psychology behind this could also just be that we're exhausted with all the options and all the time and energy it takes to just sift through matches and figure out if we're choosing the right person or if we're just kind of settling. And especially if we're doing this on the toilet and like swiping through 100 people while taking a poop. We're spending so much energy trying to find a match, a hookup, but have we looked at ourselves? How much of our quest to find love and fill in every possible moment with a swipe is about avoiding just being with ourselves? This is the question my guest today, Hayley Quinn, posed at a recent TED Talk she gave. Hayley has helped hundreds of thousands of men and women rethink their love lives, but it was a painful heartbreak that led her to a new minimalist approach in the digital age. First up, a moment from her TED Talk.
So let me tell you a love story.
Once upon a time, not so long ago, in a land that I Googled to be 5,172 miles away, I met a guy, and he was perfect. So I'll tell you the meeting story. I had just taped this really cool TV show about experimenting with your sexuality, and I met him at the after party through one of our famous friends who was a DJ. He was tall, dark, handsome, kind of a rock star, and a little bit emotionally unavailable. Very soon, we were spending all of our time together. We threw these really cool parties for all of our cool friends. We went backstage at every festival, and when my hands were cold, he would take them under his arms to warm them up. He was my best friend, and I thought we would be together forever. And so strong was that belief that when the warning signs came, I just ignored them. Until the day that I couldn't ignore them anymore. I'd become quite unwell. I wasn't so pretty anymore, and I definitely couldn't go out to any of the parties. In fact, I was, for the first time in my life, actually vulnerable because I was miscarrying our baby. And at that point, when I was at my weakest, he left.
She goes on to describe the painful moments of dragging yourself around an empty house and all those sort of behaviours we engage in to look outside and escape ourselves.
If you're experiencing Groundhog Day when it comes to your dating life, I think that the thing is, you think that it's because you're meeting loads of players or nice guys finish last, or you just haven't met the one yet, or that dating is a numbers game. But I think actually these truisms that surround dating aren't in fact true at all. In fact, I think they lead us away from what the real issue is. Because the problem, and I know this doesn't make for comfy listening, the problem it's with you, it's with me, it's with our ridiculous ideas around romance, it's with our needs that we haven't realized yet, it's with our past that we don't want to talk about, it's with our desires, it's with our inability to get through one day with picking up our smartphones, and it's with what we value.
And now to our interview.
My name is Hayley Quinn, and I'm well known as I'm the artist formerly known as the UK's leading dating expert, and I subsequently do sort of feminism does dating. So it's like how being a feminist can help you find your man. And I'm really interested basically in looking at love and dating and examining it and thinking, hang on a second, has love and dating so far been constructed, first of all, not by design, but just how it's happened in a way that isn't actually very well suited to women? And if I look at the language around love, the practices of dating, how we go about things, our mindset towards it, I often find that it actually moves women into a position where they're quite disempowered, whether it's how to get the guy or how to catch and keep a man, what the rules are that we have to abide by so as not to scare the man off. I think there's actually a lot of subtle sexism in dating and relationships that we need to peel back as women, because when we buy into that, you know what, then that's when we approach things the wrong way and we approach things from a place of insecurity. So I'm really interested in how I can coach women to do things that serve them.
If Tom texts you, which he won't because it's still daylight, wait 4 hours to respond.
I was not even thinking
anything
about
Tom. Anything sooner implies that you're needy and really codependent and incapable of a simple hookup, which is all he's good for.
I think that I could actually be like a
And when you respond, do not respond in full sentences. And if you use an emoji, I will tip punch you.
Fine. Going through the Christmas and New Year period, it's where there's a high exposure level as a woman, if you're single, to comments that people really just make without really any full, I think, understanding of what they're implying and what they're saying. So I think it's pretty common. Like, you know, if you're a woman and you're pregnant, people will feel like it's cool just to comment on your pregnancy or your bump, even if they don't know you. And it's the same if you're a single woman, especially if you're a single woman of a certain age. That seems to open the floodgates for people to say, you know, you're intimidating, but you're so attractive. Why are you single? Maybe you're being too picky, you know. And I listen to all these things, these casual explanations for a woman who is single, And underneath it, I see like a real social anxiety with the thought of a woman being by herself.
Bridget.
Hi, Uncle Jeffrey.
Had a drink?
No.
Come on then.
Actually, not my uncle. Someone who insists I call him uncle while he gropes my ass and asks me the question dreaded by all singletons.
So, how's your love life?
Super. Thanks, Uncle G.
Still no fellow then, eh? I don't know.
You career girls can't put it off forever, you know. Tick-tock,
tick-tock. And therefore, I think because we're so surrounded by this noise that just says, you know what? If you're a single woman, that is in some way uncool, that we then feel this pressure to go and, like, you know, almost validate our existence by finding a man. And because of that, we often buy into advice. You know, my main thing that I like to generally bash and attack is like a book like The Rules, which is just, if you read it, it's just awful.
Okay. Now, Sherry, in the book you say women should wait at least 4 hours before answering a guy's text. Where does this magical four-hour number come from?
We did a lot of research, and it's just for the first text. Basically, you want to send the message to a guy that you're busy, you have a life, you have the work, you have gym, friends, and he can wait.
Alrighty. So when you're chatting over the phone or on Skype, you say it's important for ladies to finish all conversations first. Why is that?
Yeah, you gotta get out of there. He's gotta think you have a life. When you end things first, you leave him wanting more. And he has to think you've got the gym, yoga, your boss. He can't think that he's your whole world. And girls have a very hard time ending things with a cute guy. End it, girls.
It's just generally terrible advice. That also, not only does it not work, it also, as I think, makes you feel bad and insecure about yourself as you're using it. So my main goal is that I'm going out there and I'm going, hey, you know what? A lot of that marketing, which makes you feel really afraid, a lot of those messages in the movies or pop songs, which give a really idealized version of love. You know, that stranger at the Christmas party who made that weird comment because they were unsure what to say to you because you don't have a male partner in your life. How can we not buy into that message and instead, you know, sit and be consolidated in our own identity and think actually about how we can approach dating in a way that isn't just about getting maximum male attention, but is about actually engaging with men in a way that we're looking for a partner or many, many partners who are best and most suitable to us. So I try and take the fear factor out of dating for women.
I like it. I actually don't know the book, The Rules.
Oh gosh, I almost want to get it now off the shelf and read you an extract.
Yes, I'm so curious. Can you? Is it around?
Yeah. Just give me a second, Bryony.
Okay, awesome.
I'm going to go down my. You know, I had an iced coffee in the fridge as well that I was thinking about. So this is a perfect
place
to go get that as well. First thing about The Rules is, get this. When I pulled it off the shelf, it was like it was just after Donald Trump had been elected. And there's an actual reference to him in there as well. So it feels very much like a sign of the times in a worrying way. So let me just, I'm gonna read you a quote or read the, and I just, for any people that are listening to this or in women, I just want you to feel a bit angry or a bit, just to understand that this is the message that we're kind of swamped with at the moment, and how this soaks into our consciousness, and how this kind of might lead us to make silly decisions or decisions that don't really serve us when it comes to dating. Okay, so listen to this. Quote, rule number two, look like a creature unlike any other. Tycoon Donald Trump likes tall, gorgeous, European model types like first wife Ivana and current wife, Melania. The point? It's a waste of time to chase guys. You may not be their look, so no matter how wonderful you are, they won't be interested. We often tell women who feel blah with brown hair to try highlights or go blonde. Men prefer long, feminine, stick straight hair. Quote.
I can't believe that.
That is the biggest selling female dating Bible, Bryony. This is what we're up against.
This is so sad. Who on earth wrote that?
It was two New York women. And the thing is, even if women have not read The Rules, like I've read all the I've got a book myself coming out next year, so I've read all the dating books to prepare me for it. But even if you haven't read it, the advice that's in the rules, which is all very about, you know, adopting a very passive role in the dating experience, which is like, you know, don't approach him, don't communicate interest, you know, don't reply to his text message for like 3 days. That advice all comes from the rules. And what's in it, while there's some, you know, on a purely tactical level, if you wanted to ensure that you would get a man and risk very little fear of rejection, there's a part of it that works. But will the man like be a good match for you? Is it the right way to encourage women to behave? Definitely not. And I think it makes us all, it encourages this one real sort of form of womanhood, which is a sort of a very identikit, nothing wrong with being blonde, but a very, very blonde model of woman that's okay, and one form of female behavior that's acceptable and allowable, and everything else is seen as negative. And I think there's so many different expressions of femininity and different personality types that we really have to look for a different approach and strategy to dating that serves us as women more and isn't just about finding a Donald Trump figure to make us wife number 5.
I'm looking for the goddess. Are you the goddess? Who is the goddess? The goddess is the woman, is a woman, is any woman, is all women.
A figure that is sexy, slim, tight, excellent legs.
Hi, my name's Mike, and if you're sitting there watching this tape smoking your cigarette, well, hit the fast forward button, because I don't smoke and I don't like people who do smoke.
I'm not afraid to get sand on my tuxedo if you're not afraid to let the wind mess your hair up a little bit when I take the top down.
Perhaps even a nice bath with some champagne and candles.
And the dating advice that you hit on the internet, I think, is as backwards as kind of like working rules and regulations were towards women, you know, going back decades ago. It's not progressive. It's not in line with how women live their lives today. And in fact, I think lots of time makes us feel worse. So what I want to do is trying to flip that whole system and look at dating from a completely different perspective, one that actually serves and suits women. Even if this is a bit bleeding edge feminism at the moment, and you know, there's probably an argument that if you follow the rules, you will get a partner of some kind. I think that, you know, as women, we have to take responsibility as well to, like, when someone says something that's clearly like a bogus piece of actually quite sexist advice, or when we're reading something or we see an advert and we think, hang on a second, that doesn't feel fair, or like that's not very nice, or that's targeting lots of my insecurities. And if it's unhelpful, it's unprogressive. I think we almost have like a social responsibility as well to try and do things differently, because I think otherwise we're going to be in like the dark ages of dating for forever.
And what's scary is that technology is almost amplifying that in a way.
Right, because if you look at a dating app, it's quite male in how it's been designed, you could say. I think dating apps are, to an extent, unavoidably slightly visual in the beginning. It also gives the illusion that there's an endless amount of choice, that, you know, there's always more people to meet. And that means, I think, that people can be more dismissive of others, more perfectionist, worse at communicating. People think it's kind of cool just to disappear on somebody else. And I think there's lots of negative dating behaviors that we can link to the progression of technology. And whilst I'm not saying that we should, you know, go back to our grandparents' generation and, you know, marry one of the 5 available men that was in our village and just stick with them, come hell or high water, I don't think that's good either. But I also think that there's a better middle ground between the state that we've got to, which is where we feel like maybe we have an infinite selection of partners, and because that we become unwilling to work on things, inflexible, worse at communicating, more dismissive, and in the end, you know, we actually don't get that and many of our emotional needs met. So I've kind of got a bone to pick. I'm not saying that dating apps are all wrong, but I think it's good that when we approach dating, we go, okay, dating apps are one way of meeting people, and it's, in a sense, the fact they're very randomized can be good, because you meet people that you would never have met in real life, of course. However, the fact that they, you know, but that randomization means that they might not be as time efficient as a way to meet people as you might think. And in fact, actually, you know, learning to start conversations with people again, you know, that you meet through stuff that you're interested in already, whether that's like yoga or dance or technology, might be better. It might also be cool if there's a coffee shop you really love or a bar or, you know, a hotel lobby you hang out in a lot, to spend some more time there. And again, just engage with the people that are spending time in the same geographical locations as you, to maybe be also open to making new female relationships and platonic friendships that you can then use to move into new social circles. So I think there's a lot more, there's a bigger range of strategies that we can look at dating through than just, let's just get on an app then.
Yeah, you did this fantastic video, I think last week, where you did IRL versus URL dating, you know, tell us about that.
So we went out to the streets of Soho in central London, and we decided, we only had 30 minutes, I think, by the time everybody turned up that day, because we have a bit of we're not the most punctual group of people, to go and practice saying hello to Ben in real life. And we tried seeing, with a variety of different opening lines and icebreakers, whether we got better matches in real life versus using dating apps online.
Sorry, I just wanted, is this the right way for Whole Foods?
Whole Foods?
Because I'm meant to meet my friends there. Oh no, I've walked in the opposite way.
Well, you guys look pretty familiar with the area, but you still have to look it up on your map.
No. Everywhere in London.
I've lived here 2 years.
Still gonna have to use City Mapper.
Mm-hmm. I'm a City Mapper girl myself. Definitely not a Google Maps.
No.
I'm from Canada.
Oh. Okay, so I just have to first of all just develop the ability to walk through solid objects.
Exactly.
But what we discovered is, like, you know, we just went to a juice bar in Soho, and you know, Soho is a pretty cool central London neighborhood. It's pretty like Soho in New York. And you know, juice bar again. You know, there's somebody there who's got a level of disposable income, and they're choosing to drink green juice instead of, like, I don't know, a Starbucks. And we got talking to a couple of guys that were working on laptops there that were giving us all the signs of entrepreneurialism. And by adding in those parameters of, like, you know, neighborhood, juice bar, working on laptop, that actually provided, I think, a better filter for the quality of men that we were meeting versus, you know, randomly swiping for matches on Tinder.
This is a situation I get into all the time. I'll text a girl, she texts me back right away. I text her back right away. She texts me back right away. I text her back right away. She texts me back right away. I text her back right away. She texts me back right away. Then I'll say something like, all right, cool, so you want to get pizza on Tuesday? And then I don't hear anything. And I'm like, what just happened? I know you read that shit. You responded to 20 other things I just said. What, do you not like me anymore? You don't have 2 seconds to say, yes, I want to get pizza, or no, I don't want to get pizza? Would you check your phone into a locker and go ride a roller coaster for a few hours? What's the deal? And after a few hours of no response, I get real upset. And I just want to send a text that says something like, well, guess who just got uninvited to the pizza party? You did, because I hate you now. Girl always writes something bad. Sorry, I was at my niece's ballet recital. We had to turn off our phones. Whatever, we're done. I finished that pizza hours ago. I'm going with my friend Brian. He's nice to me.
To give some sympathy here to the guys, because I know I've been talking about women's dating a lot, because I still actively work for the big community of men as well. And one of the things they suffer from is they will write the equivalent of War and Peace to a woman in terms of messages and emails, and, oh God, they've got so much in common. And then, like, the guy goes on to the date thinking, like, oh, this is going really well. And the woman turns around and says, oh, I'm sorry, there wasn't any spark. And the guy is like, what is the spark? But we had a spark. We were writing for like 3 weeks, you know? And then it doesn't translate into anything. And I think all of that psychological investment we can have from just writing to someone, or even from a technology thing as well, just how much people just want to have someone to chat to on, like, Instant Messenger or WhatsApp.
I just moved here, so I'm trying to meet some women, and I'm doing the online dating, and every girl has a picture of them on a hike in front of some, like, desolate landscape. And that smile, just, you know, and a hat pulled all low, like they're about to catch a fly ball in Little League. And then they're rock climbing, and they're doing triathlons, and it's just like, am I going on a date with a Navy SEAL? Like, what is this?
we're having less sex than we were in the past. Our parents were having more sex than us, which is a freaky thing to think about in itself. And I think that part of that is because we have different ways to get those needs met. I think some are healthier than others. And I also think we're moving away from, something where we can see it as a, having it either as a service, which removes our emotional risk. I think there's something about that that is not necessarily positive. I also think we can't be too clinical or too detached about things. And in fact, doing stuff that's kinesthetic, which involves cuddling someone, which means they touch you, which means you have to spend time with them to build trust, and all those kind of traditional things actually serve so many of our fundamental human needs. And I think we've got a desire where we want to outsource it. We want to press a button and get it, like we get Uber or like we get, takeout. But that is not the nature of how human relationships work. As much as we would love to, sometimes I would love to press a button, like an emergency button, when I'm feeling a bit rubbish. I've woken up and it's Sunday morning and I'm like, oh, geez, I'm by myself. Oh, crap, someone's got engaged, feeling lame, got a hangover. I wish sometimes there was a button on the wall that you could just break glass in case of dating emergency and teleport like a nice man figure into my room. But I think as much as that would be awesome, and maybe in the future, maybe one day we'll figure out how to do that, like space food or something. I think right now our reality is, I think we're spending too much time trying to make services out of and replace intimacy when it's there. Like, it's there in those human acts that we can do for one another, whether it's making friends with our neighbors or going to a dance class or just chatting to someone because we're both delayed in the same queue. I think that's actually is much more fulfilling.
I think technology complicates dating, because 10 years ago you couldn't be like, he said he wasn't going out, but then he just checked in on Foursquare at this bar. Or, I don't follow him on Twitter, but I look at his Twitter and I see that he's getting drinks right now. Like, that happens. Like, that's not a crazy person thing to do. Maybe it's a little crazy. And of course, in an ideal world, you're not checking them because you don't care enough, or you're, this strong woman who, I don't care if he's drinking margaritas right now, but that's not the reality. Like, the reality is you care because it's human nature.
I think Instagram, I swear, the developers behind that are making it so it's more suitable for stalking people, it's like Instagram stories. We see who's liked what, they've uploaded a photo, or even worse, I know WhatsApp isn't so big in North America, but it's kind of huge in Europe and South America. And it's like, you get two blue ticks. So it's like, they've definitely read the message. What? They were last online just 10 minutes ago, but they haven't replied to me. It really, and then what happens is you enter into a big fat story as to why that happened. And because we, as humans, we have a bias where we always think everything is about us. So we suddenly just start imagining, oh my God, it's because they don't like me that much, or they went on the date and they've decided that it's not happening between us. And we don't know any of that stuff is happening. We know objectively you might want to, they haven't responded to you. You can know subjectively that you like someone who's more communicative than that. But I think the stories, the anxiety, the assumption we launch into has 100 million% been amplified by use of social media and by our instant messaging generation.
And there's this idea of revenge analytics. I don't know if you've heard this before. So it's basically like, you start spending a lot of time looking at your ex-partners, their digital footprint, and uncovering dirt on them through, looking through their Facebook or their Twitter or Instagram. Oh, they're in this country and they're hanging out with this girl, and like how unhealthy that can be as well, the amount of time we can now spend trolling our exes.
Right. And I mean, the best I have to say, I've done that. And it's like, you know what, when you uncover something and it's like, oh my God, OMG, and I've threw my heart, but you've kind of you've done it to yourself. it is like masochistic behavior. And it's just like, you're doing it, at least hold your hands up and know what you're participating in. And I think that also, two things why I would suggest not to do it, though fully understand. I always say fully understand why you'd be tempted, because I think it's kind of human. when we don't have full resolution to something and we're lacking closure, there's two things that are happening there. One, you are keeping participating in that relationship, which is like you are trying in some way to keep it alive because you're still looking them up. So you've got to know that this isn't just you aggravating yourself and causing yourself emotional harm, but you're also just there's something in that where you're still trying to have some kind of control over a situation which is just like not to do with you anymore. And then secondly, I think we all have to imagine that we're like, you know, we're 80, we're 90, we're 100 years old, or however long we're going to live to now, and we're thinking like, geez, how did I spend those years of my life? And I'm sure if we do retrospective, most of us would not want to be searching out a former partner's social media profile and looking at like who they followed on Instagram recently. You know, so I think if anything, it's like you'd start to do it, go, okay, that was natural because that breakup was a bit abrupt, or that guy just ghosted me, or she just disappeared. So yeah, I'm not going to kick myself. I'm not going to just hate myself for doing it. But was that a really, but you know, now it's like, you know, we're 4 weeks on from DEFCON 1, you know, we're not at the ultra breakup level. How do I now start to develop strategies where I can reinvest in myself and put my attention elsewhere so I psychologically get a chance to move on? Because I think moving on was probably easier, a lot easier pre-internet. You know, like then you could just like, then it was just going to be awkward if you bumped into them at like a pub or a bar, like 6 months later by accident, you know, rather than like you constantly have access to their digital footprint and therefore the ability to imagine and forecast who they're with now and then make up loads of stories and assumptions around that and still actually just get looped back into relationships which need just to be left in the past.
Hayley's right. Dating, relationships, and breakups are a lot more complex today. Our offline lives are so intermingled with our online lives that everything we do, including each other, is affected. And while we joke half seriously, half joking about wasting time stalking exes on social media, digital abuse is now an entirely new category of abuse and commonly exhibited between former partners. This includes sharing nasty messages online, contacting an ex's new partner, or threatening to share something online that they didn't consent to. And, of course, stalking. In the area of digital abuse, it's such early days that the only research I could find on it was released last year by the British Psychological Society. And the study found that 37% of respondents in the study had experienced some sort of online abuse by an ex. So maybe the future of dating and relationships is going to be about taking a step back from technology. We pour our energy into technology to find a date, to manage a relationship, and to stay in that relationship, even when it's clearly over in our offline lives. Now, while it may not be possible to separate our online and our offline selves, it is up to us to choose where we invest our time, where we seek our mates, and where we scroll and spend so much time with our eyeballs.
You know what those people say to you? They say, you need to be alone before you can, or be by yourself before you can meet someone else. I used to think those people were boring. Now I think they're right. They're definitely probably right. Because I think sometimes actually, when we actually confront our aloneness and we start to deal with our needs and the past and all that horrible pain that, you know, as people we just collect and carry with us throughout our lives, when we deal with that and we're not running from it in endless people or endless dates, when we don't have anything to prove anymore, when you don't need a destructive, ridiculous on-off relationship in order to feel alive, in order to feel like you exist, when you can just be, I kind of actually think that's real love. Thanks very much.
And as always, I asked Hayley, what is the future of sex?
I would say, like, I hope the future of sex is a return to the realness of sex, which is meeting people in real life and using technology to facilitate that and as a help rather than as a hindrance.
Thanks for listening to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. If you like the show, go rate us on iTunes, subscribe, and tell your friends about us as well. Thanks to Hayley Quinn for being a great part of this episode. Make sure you check out her site, hayleyquinn.com, that's with a double N, and there's free resources there as to how to approach men and women IRL. You can also check out the show notes on futureofsex.org, and if you're in New York, I have a surprise for you. We have our second live recording next week on March the 13th, Monday night in Brooklyn. So check futureofsex.org/events for details and to RSVP. I'd love to see you there. This podcast was produced and edited by Chad Michael Snavely. To get in touch or check out the other podcasts Chad is producing, visit chadmichael.com. And if you have any questions or feedback or just want to keep up with what I'm doing, follow me on Twitter @BrianyCole. Until next time.